All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Vav 96. We are picking up on Tzadik Vav 96 at the Mishnah. Our shiurim this month are dedicated by Samuel Alka Esterson in honor of the yahrzeits of their parents, Ludwig Stiefel, Yitzchok, Leib Ben Aaron HaKohen, and Hinda Esterson, Hinda Bas Henoch Ephraim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah and the family a Nechama. We'll say, let's begin Mishnah. Beautiful, beautiful Gemara ahead of us today again. Chavitei Kohen Gadol. So, let's remember again, we began yesterday with a discussion in terms of now the actual, like, lemaisa details of how you're going to go ahead and make the menachos. So, yesterday we spoke about the Lechem Aponim and the Shtei Alechem. We spoke about the idea that they can be kneaded and arranged outside, but need to be baked inside of the Beis HaMikdash. Now we come to the Chavitei Kohen Gadol. So, let's remember again, Chavitei Kohen Gadol is the unique mincha offering that is given by the Kohen Gadol every single day. It is one isaron, but it is split into two halves, right? Half is offered up in the morning, half is offered up in the afternoon. So it says the Mishnah, Chavitei Kohen Gadol, lishasan va'arichasan va'afiyasan bifnim. So when it comes to Chavitei Kohen Gadol, everything has to be done inside of the Beis HaMikdash. The dough has to be kneaded, arranged, and baked inside the Beis HaMikdash. The dochos es ha-shabbos. And the Rebbe said, interestingly enough, they have to go ahead and they are docha Shabbos. You can even go ahead and make it on Shabbos. Tichinasan v'har kadasan eino docha es ha-shabbos. But the grinding and sifting of the flour, that is not docha Shabbos. Why not? Klal om Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva says, komolacha she'efshar la'asosu me'erev Shabbos eino docha es ha-shabbos. I will say, because on a simple level, whatever can be done on Erev Shabbos is not Docha Shabbos. V'shi'iyav shar la'asos sumei Erev Shabbos, but any malacha which cannot be done as of Erev Shabbos, Docha es ha-Shabbos. I will say, so here's the logic. The Chavitei Kohen Gadol must be made daily. You cannot bake it the day before. Why can't you bake it on Erev Shabbos? Lina, right? So again, therefore, I can't bake it on Erev Shabbos, and therefore, again, it's baking is Docha Shabbos. However, the grinding and the sifting of the flour, we'll say, which absolutely can be done on Erev Shabbos, must be done on Erev Shabbos. We'll say, just interestingly enough, we find like a same halacha by Yom Tiv. Although there is a license for Ochal Nefesh on Yom Tiv, you're allowed to engage in halacha for the sake of food preparation. Really, it only applies for things which cannot be done before Yom Tiv with the same qualitative results. But anything that can be done before Yom Tov with the same qualitative results really must be done before Yom Tov. So this is the Klal of Rabbi Akiva. Good. Weiter. Kol HaMelachos, Yesh Ben Maisei Kli Bifnim. Ve'ein Bohen Maisei Kli Bachutz. Suppose another interesting halacha. So all Menachos have what we call a Maisei Kli Bifnim. Now what does it mean, Maisei Kli Bifnim? We'll say, look at Rashi. It's Rashi almost right across on the right hand side. Maisei Kli, Lisha Va'aricha Hakol Bikli Sharis Bifnim V'lo Bachutz. So we'll say, when it comes to menachos, now what I do want to point out is, remember, that's why, if you notice, Shtei Halechem and Lechem Aponim were mentioned in a separate Mishnah, because, again, as we already see, their halachas are different. But the rest of menachos, they have a Maisei Kli, which means a mincha must be prepared in a Kli Sharis, a service utensil. Now, once you tell me that a mincha has to be prepared in a service utensil, then what does that tell me? Where is it prepared? Inside of the Beis HaMikdash. There is no such thing as use of a Kli Sharis outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, again, these two principles go hand in hand. Kol HaMenachos Yishra Maisei Kli. If a mincha has to be prepared in a Kli, therefore, Kol HaMenachos Yishra Maisei Kli Bifnim Vein Bohen Maasei Kli Bachutz. Therefore, again, I will say the halacha is, if it requires a Kli Sharis, that means everything is prepared inside the Beis HaMikdash. No Kli Sharis is used outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Good. But I'll say, jumping back for a little bit to Shtei Alechem, now we're giving dimensions. I actually read this to you in the Rambam yesterday, but the Mishnah writes as follows. Shtei Alechem, Arkan Shiva Tvachim. So also when it comes to the Shtei Alechem, the length was 7 Tvachim. Rachban Dalet Tvachim. The width was 4 Tvachim. The karnos of arba etzbos. And I will say, literally again, it had horns. Horns were these protrusions that came up off the sides, and those were arba etzbos. Those were 4 finger breadths. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, v'karnos sehal, shahia madbik batzek lechozovis, they would stick on additional dough on every corner, ke'im kronim, like corners, like horns, v'orech ha'keren dalet etzbos, and the length, right, the upward length, really the height, ultimately, again, of the corner, was 4 finger breadths. Lechem aponim. Suppose that's Shtei Alechem. Lechem aponim. What were the dimensions of Lechem aponim? Arkon Yud Tvachim, it was 10 Tvachim long, meaning it had a length of 10 Tvachim. The Rachban Hei Tvachim, a width of Hei Tvachim. The Karnosav Sheva Etzbaos. And I both say its horns, or is the part of the bread that was folded upwards, Sheva Etzbaos was seven finger breadths high. Okay? Rabbi Huda Omer, supposed to Rabbi Huda says, if you want to remember this, Shelotite Zadad Yahaz. Zadad Yahaz. Zedad Yahaz. That's your way to remember this, I will say. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says Zedad. Remember again, Zayin Dalid Dalid. So that refers to the Shtei Halechem. Shtei Halechem was 7 Tfachim in length, 4 Tfachim in width, and the horns were the corners, we're called, were 4 Tfachim high. Yahaz is the Lechem Hapanim, 10 Tfachim long, 5 Tfachim wide, and the karnos, the horns, were 7 finger breadths high. Good, Zedad Yahaz. You take nothing else from Maseches Menachos. You got Zedad Yahaz. Good. Ben Zomer says, V'nasata ala shulchan lechem panim lefonai tamid. So we'll say now, Ben Zomer makes another drasha. The drasha says, you shall place lechem upon him on the shulchan. Differently. You shall place on the shulchan lechem panim lefonai tamid. So you shall place on the shulchan lechem panim before me at all times. So Ben Zoma darshins, what does it mean lechem panim? What does that mean? To which Ben Zoma darshins, shiyihu lo panim. What it means is that it should have faces. I will say, what does faces mean? Look at Rashi. Shiyihu lo panim defanos. It should have clearly discernible sides. Lashon acher shiyihu lo panim zovios. The Hinein Kronos. Otherwise, Rashi says, or alternatively, it means it should have corners. We'll see in the Gemara exactly what it means. But the point over here is that Ben Zoma understands that the fact that the Torah doesn't just call these loaves lechem, but rather calls it lechem panim, bread with faces, is telling us something about the nature of the tzura of the bread. So what is telling us? Emir Tashem, we will see. Hashulchan. Arko yod v'rach bo chamisha. Now this is very interesting. So now we have the dimensions of... Now, shtei lechem doesn't go on the shulchan, so that doesn't matter for us. But we have the dimensions of lechem upon him. Now let's get the dimensions of the shulchan. So watch this. Hashulchan, arko yod v'rach bo chamisha. The shulchan, Abosai, had a length, ultimately, again, of 10 tefachim, a width of 5 tefachim. Okay. Lechem upon him. Arko yud v'rach bohe. We'll say, in lechem upon him also had a length of 10 tefachim and a width of 5 tefachim. But no same arko keneged rach bo shel shulchan. So we'll say, remember again, the width of the bread was put on the length of the table. So again, they were not aligned measurement-wise, but rather again, rach, literally again, no same arko keneged rach bo. They replaced the length of the lechem corresponding to the width of the table. The kofel, now, remember again, on the shulchan itself, it's important to remember, on the shulchan itself, there are 2 stacks of bread, right? 2 stacks. So now, what would happen? So basically what they would do is, they would kind of fold over, right? 2.5 tefachim on each side of the loaf. Nimtza, Arko memale rachbo shel shulchan de Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, we'll say it turns out, and again, we'll see this in the Gemara more clearly. It turns out that the length of the breads, 2 stacks of bread, would go ahead and fill up the width of the table. De Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says, Hashulchan arko yudbeis v'rachbo vav. But it's actually very interesting. There's a machlokis now about the dimensions of the shulchan. So Rabbi Meir says, the shulchan actually had a length of 12 tefachim, a width of 6 tefachim. Okay. Lechem aponim, on the other hand, was arko yud v'rach bohei. Lechem aponim, we'll say, had a length of 10 tefachim, a width of 5 tefachim. No sin arko keneged rach bo shel shulchan. So we'll say, he agrees with the same idea, which is that you go ahead and you take the length of the bread and put it in the corresponding width of the table. Now, again, I will say, if that's the case, you only have an overhang. That's, remember, there's 2 sets of loaves. Kofel tfachayim ikan, utfachayim ikan. So we'll say, so therefore, again, you would go ahead and fold over 2 tfachim from each side. Utfachayim revach be'emsa. And there'd be 2 tfachim of empty space in between the 2 stacks of bread. What would you do with that? What was the point of that space? Kedesha teha ruach mina shevespan. They both say you want that space. Why? Because you've seen this already before. What do you want on the shulchan? You want airflow. Why do you want airflow on the Shulchan? To avoid spoilers. Mostly, remember we spoke about this before. We're going to see something amazing, that although there were miracles with the Lechem upon him, we didn't rely on miracles, and we did whatever we needed to do in order to ensure the freshness of the bread. So therefore, again, in Rabbi Meir's model, there was two tefachim of empty space in between the two stacks of bread in order to allow flow of air. Abishol says, Sham hayu nosdin shnei bazichin levona shalachem upon him. So Abishol says, Abishol agrees with Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, I want to point out, Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir over here is whether or not there was space in between the loaves. According to Rabbi Yehuda, there was no space in between the two stacks. According to Rabbi Meir, there was two tefachim of space. What did you do with the two tefachim of space? Nothing. You actually just left it open. Comes along Ben Abishol, and Abishol agrees with Rabbi Meir's dimensions, and therefore says there is empty space in between the two stacks of bread, but he says that empty space was utilized. What was it utilized for? That's where they put the two spoons of frankincense in between the lechem aponim. Amrulo, they said to Abishol, Valo kvar ne'emar, v'nasata al ha-ma'areches levona zaka. But it already says they shall place on the ma'areches. Now, what's ma'areches? Ma'areches is the stack. Now, the pashtos, what they're saying to Abishol is, the pasuk seems to teach us that where would they place the levona? On the bread itself. The levona doesn't rest on the shulchan. The levona rests on the bread, actually on one of the loaves. Remember again, Abishol, we actually spoke about yesterday. Do you remember again, according to the approach of Rabbi Chanina, who we paskin like, that the bread was made kamin teva prutza, like the U. One of the rayus from was Watabos, if you remember, that we brought this idea that you have to place the lavona on the lechem upon him. So if the lechem is made like a U and has a flat bottom, I could place the lavona there. Remember again, this was the kasha. This was the kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. How can you say it's kamin spina rokedes? Where would you place the lavona? So Abishol's coming along and saying that the lavona was placed on the shulchan. The Gemara is saying, the Mishnah is saying, no, it wasn't. It was placed on the lechem. That's what the pasuk says. V'nasata al ha-ma'areches levona zaka. You shall place on the staff, which means you shall place on the bread the pure levona. To which Benzoma, I just keep saying Benzoma, Abishol says, Amar lahem, Hare kvar ne'emar v'alov mate menashe. So we'll say, to which, interestingly enough, he goes ahead and he quotes the pasuk, Va'alov mata menashe, Va'alov mata menashe, v'nasi levnei menashe, gamliel ben bedatzor. So we'll say this pasuk is talking about the formation or the placement of the different tribes in the camp. The point that Abishol is trying to make over Rabosei is that sometimes biblically, the word alov does not have to mean on top of. But the word alov could also mean what? Next to or near. So therefore, again, Abishol says, when the pasuk says, v'nasata al ma'areches levona zaka, you're interpreting it to mean that the levona has to be placed on top of the bread. Maybe not. Maybe it means that the levona could be placed where? Near the bread. So where is near the bread? On the shulchan. Abishol therefore says, I hold it, Rabbi Meir, that there's two tefachim of empty space in between the two stacks of bread, and that is where the levona is going to be placed. Good. V'arboa senifin shel zav hayushan. Abosai, there are four supports. Remember again, we spoke about these supports on the side of the shulchan. So machlokis again, we saw, do the supports run down to the ground? Right? Really, when we say supports, really, if you could imagine, the shulchan itself is a table. There are two stacks to contain the 12 loaves that are placed on top of the shulchan. The snifin, if you can imagine, are kind of like sides of the table. They would call them supports, but they're there to support the stacks. They're sides of the table. So we saw that there's a machlokes about whether or not those supports, do they rest on the ground, or do they rest actually on the top of the shulchan? Do they sit on the flat part of the shulchan extending upwards, or do they sit on the ground? So we're going to get back into that in just a little bit. So the Gemara says, Arba snifin shel zav hayu. There are four supports. If you can imagine, like four golden boards, two on each side of the shulchan. Remember again, the shulchan doesn't have these supports on all sides. It just has it on two sides to go ahead and to support the stacks of bread. So there are two boards on each side. V'arba snifin shel zav hayusham, mifutzalin meroshehen. So we'll say literally again, mifutzalin meroshehen means that there were protrusions coming out of the top. Shahayu somchin bahen shnayim l'seder zeh u'shnayim l'seder zeh. So we'll say, the Gemara is going to get into a little bit more exactly how all of this is set up, but they have protrusions coming out of the boards. Ultimately, again, two to support this stack and two to support this stack. The kavches kanim. Okay, so we'll say there were 28 rods. Those are the rods that we spoke about before that, remember again, were placed between the loaves also to allow for airflow. There are 28 rods in total. Kana chalol. So we'll say kana chalol means, when we think of rods, you think of a cylinder. It was like so literally again, kechatzi kana chalol means like the half of a hollowed out reed. So the rods themselves were like U-shaped, were semicircles. Again, I will say, why? Interestingly enough, all of this is about airflow. So it is fascinating to see how much of the shulchan is constructed so as to prevent spoilage in the loaves, right? But yet, amazingly enough, what the lechem apanim staying fresh was one of the miracles of the Beis Hamikdash. So it's just this fascinating dialectic between, on one hand, the recognition of God's miraculous intervention, while on the other hand, our obligation to do whatever is within our power to work within the olam hateva, work within the natural world. So okay, it's interesting. So next, so kechatzi kanachalo arba asar l'seder zeh v'yadal l'seder zeh. Both say there were 14 of these rods. 14 of these rods, ultimately, again, for each stack. Lo sider kanim, v'lo netilasim dochas shabbos. This is very interesting. So ultimately, again, you can't arrange the rods, nor can you go ahead and remove them on Shabbos. They're not dochas Shabbos. I was saying, now what's the issue with arranging or taking off the rods on Shabbos? So I say, so interestingly enough, we will see that here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, "Lo sidr hakonim b'ma'arechas hachadasha lo netilasa me'ala yishan adocha Shabbos." So as I say, interestingly enough, this seems to be an issue of bona, of building. I will say, now, this would be binyan b'kelim, right? Whether or not there's a concept of bona. Bona, building, is one of the 39 malachas. So we'll say there's machlokas as to whether or not the concept of building applies to utensils or not. So generally we assume not. This would be a din d'rabbanan. So normally we assume ein shavus b'mikdash, that rabbinic law doesn't apply in the base of mikdash. So again, I'm just giving you kind of coming attractions because it's exciting. I can't hold back. So, but we'll see in the Gemara, we're going to discuss this a little bit, because this is really fascinating, because here you seem to see that a dirabanan seems to be creeping in into temple service, which normally we do not see. But in any event, for our purposes just today, the Mishnah says that that the arrangement and the removal of the rods is not docha Shabbos. So ella nichnas me'erev Shabbos v'shomto v'nosna la'akosh al shulchan. Rather, what do? You come in on erev Shabbos. I'll say, so remember again, on Shabbos, what you really have going on over here is you're going to need to take out the rods in order to go ahead and take the loaves off the table on Shabbos. So bless you. So what they used to do, because you must remember again, Shabbos is when you take the old loaves off, they're given to the Kohanim, and ultimately again, the new loaves are put on. So remember again, we're operating under the assumption right now that the way these rods work, about says, where are the rods sitting? What do they sit on? Based on what we saw earlier, they sit on the loaves themselves. That's what it sounded like before, although again, we're going to discuss what some of these protrusions are. So we'll say, so what that means is, you would have to move them on Shabbos. So therefore, again, what the Mishnah tells you is, what would they do? Ela nichnas me'erev Shabbos, v'shomto. We'll say they would come into the Beis Hamikdash on Erev Shabbos, remove the rods from between the loaves, v'nosna l'arko shel shulchan, they would place them on the length of the table, kalakeilim shayu b'mikdash arkan l'arko shel bayis. So we'll say, ultimately, again, here Rashi says, v'yir shomton, mibein kol lechem v'lechem, umanichan l'arko shel shulchan, ulumacher misadir ha'lechem l'motzei Shabbos, nosin ha'kanem bein kol lechem v'lechem. So we'll say, so even though we have the rods there, in order to prevent spoilage, by the time Friday comes around, we're not exactly so concerned about what's going to happen if the rods aren't there overnight. So Erev Shabbos, they would come in, remove the rods from between the loaves. Loaves would sit one on top of the other. They'd place the rods on the Shulchan. Shabbos day, they would give out the loaves, old loaves, to the group of Kohanim who are coming, what's the word, is off shift? Is that the right word? You know, they were finishing their shift. They would place the new loaves on the Shulchan without the rods, right? When would the rods be placed in? The rods would be placed in ultimately again on Matzah Shabbos. on Matzei Shabbos. Amazing. So it says the Mishnah, Kala Kelim Shayi B'Mikdash, Arkan La'arko Shabbos. Furthermore, again, we'll say all utensils that were in the base of Mikdash, literally, their length, they were placed lengthwise, corresponding to the length of the base of Mikdash. So we're going to discuss exactly what that means. Rashi said, well, Rashi already says, Kala Kelim Kigon Shulchanos, Arkan La'arko Shabbos, Mimizrach La'marav. So we'll say they were placed on an east-west direction. Okay? Gemara. Kalamanachos yesh by maisekli mibifnim. So Samaritan again, the Mishnah said that all manachos, we'll say, are prepared in a kli sharis, in a service utensil, and therefore by definition are prepared inside of the Beis HaMikdash. Inside the Beis HaMikdash. Shaluas Rebbe. Zuminayim. So they asked Rebbe, no, where do we know this from? That all manachos have to be prepared in a kli sharis inside the Beis HaMikdash. So Amr Lahem, Harehu Omer, Vayomer Elai, So it's actually quite interesting. Excuse me. The Gemara quotes in the Pasuk in Yecheskel. This vision of Yecheskel is actually about the Bayis Shlishi. It's actually about the third Beis HaMikdash. So when Yecheskel goes ahead and he sees his vision, ultimately, again, about the third Beis HaMikdash. So what does he see? He sees this is the place that the Kohanim will go ahead and cook their Chatas and their Asham. They will bake the Mincha in order that it not be brought out to the outer courtyard. So we'll say the Pasuk links Mincha to Chatas and Asham. Mincha dumya da asham vechatos. Ma asham vechatos to unin kli. Just like an asham and a chatas require a utensil. At me, a kli sharis. Inside of the Beis HaMikdash. So to a mincha also requires a kli sharis inside of the Beis HaMikdash. Good. Hashulchan arko asara. So let's remember again, the shulchan had a length ultimately again of 10 tefachim. So remember again, now we're going to get into a little bit the machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Right? Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion that the shulchan had a length of 10 tefachim, a width of 5 tefachim, and ultimately again, a length of 10 tefachim and a width of 5 tefachim. So that was Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir said it was a length of 12 tefachim and a width of 6 tefachim. So says the Gemara, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. The Divrei Omer Tefachim Omechza, Kofel, suppose according to the opinion who says, which is Rabbi Yehuda, the first opinion, that they took 2.5 tefachim on each side of the lechem and folded it upwards, Nimtza, Shulchan Mekadesh Chamisha Sar Tefachim. Turns out Rabbi said that what? That the Shulchan's sanctity extends 15 tefachim up. So remember when we had this concept before, that the airspace of the Shulchan, so to speak, is Mekadesh. In other words, the Shulchan itself is a klishar, service utensil. Service utensil ultimately sanctifies things. The Shulchan, because it has height to it, because the loaves extend upwards, its airspace has the ability to consecrate as well. What the Gemara is just pointing out over here is, depending on the machlokas, you know, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, depends on the height or the airspace of the shulchan, how high it is mekadesh. Say if you hold it ultimately again, there are 2.5 tefachim on each side of the lechem that are being folded upwards. So 2.5 times 6 gives you what? Gives you what? Gives you 15. So therefore, again, meaning 2.5 tefachim folded upwards of height, right? Ultimately, again, 6 loaves on each side gives you a height of 15 tefachim for each stack, which then tells you that the airspace of the shulchan, so to speak, that is mekadesh, is 15 tefachim in height. So the Gemara said, "Nimtza shulchan mekadesh chamisha asar tefachim lemala." The Divrei Omer Tefachim Kofel, what's according to the opinion of Rabbi Meir, who holds that you're only folding over 2 tefachim on each side. Therefore, what nimtza shulchan mekadesh should be tefachim lemala. Ultimately, again, he holds that the height of the shulchan, the airspace of the shulchan, for ultimately sanctifying purposes, is what Rabbi Osai is going to be 12 tefachim in height. We'll say, but 1 second. You see, you're just measuring the height of the shulchan and the height of the airspace just based on the height of the sides of the bread times 6. But there's additional height. Where is there additional height, Rabbi Osai? In the rods. Remember, again, you have the rods in between each loaf. That also contributes to the height. To which the Gemara says, no, shakui mashkeluhu. The rods used to sink into the loaves themselves, which means that the rods never gave any kind of height. Which the Gemara says, well, that doesn't make any sense. Then what's the point of the rods? My time, amishumi pushi lechem, sof sof kama afish lechem. Ultimately, again, I don't understand. The point of the rods, I will say, is what? Dafka to separate the loaves. So if you, why to prevent spoilage? If the rods are sinking into the loaves, that means it's going to be spoilage, then what's the point of the rods? To which the Gemara says, you're right, Timagbale Porta. The rods only lifted one loaf above the other, only a very minute amount. All you need is, which is all you need. All you need is a little bit of space in order to allow for airflow. So because it's a minute amount of space, it didn't really contribute that much to the height. To which the Gemara says, one second. Va'ika Huparta. But both say, still, a little bit of space times six is still significant. So therefore, again, really, halacha lemaisa, the airspace of the shulchan should either extend 15 tefachim according to one opinion, 12 tefachim according to another opinion, plus whatever the total additional height of the rods. So we'll say, interestingly enough, because the combined space generated by the rods was less than a tefach. In other words, if you were to measure the space in between each loaf, it was so minuscule that put it all together, it didn't even make a tefach. It doesn't even register halachically. Okay. Va'ika bazichin. Aira bosai. What about, ultimately, again, the bazichin? What about the spoons of frankincense? So bosai, remember again, we're assuming now the frankincense, ultimately, again, rested somewhere on the shulchan. Did that not contribute to the height as well? To which the Gemara says, Begadei delechem haviyasvi. The bazichin Abosai used to sit inside the loaves. Remember again, we're going with the idea now that the loaves are U-shaped. So the bazichin sat on the bottom part of the loaf, which means it was contained inside the loaf itself, and therefore did not add anything to the height. So the Gemara says, "Begavay lechem havi yasvi ulevahadi lechem havu kaimi." So we'll say, so the Gemara, therefore it was inside the loaves, and therefore halacha lemaisa did not really contribute to the height. I va'ika kranos. But I will say, what about the extra, literally again, the horns? Rashi says, va'ika kranos, sheboltin va'asuim b'rashi adofen. So I will say, so was there not the already extra horns? In other words, we're only talking about the amount of the loaf that was folded over. But I will say, wasn't there also the additional kranos that were part of the initial loaf that can contribute to the height? To which the Gemara says, something very interesting. Kranos legavei delechem kayev. We'll say they would fold some part of the horn into the loaf itself. Either they would, whether it was folded like this on top or folded from the side, we're going to discuss. But they would fold some part of the, they would fold some part of the horn into the bread itself. Belechem alayhu naich. And Abbas said the upper bread would rest on the horns of the lower bread. Now, of course, not directly on the horns, but rather again, what? On the rods, which were sitting on top of the lower loaf. Belechem alayhu nachle. Ba'ika amabez. Miskantos. We'll say, again, remember, says the Gemara Napa, one second, there is also the Misgeres. They will say, what's the Misgeres? So the Misgeres was like, there was like a border on the, was that the right word? A border? A what?
Frame.
Okay, good. A frame. So we'll say, so there was a frame, like a framing on the side of the shulchan. I will say, now as we're going to see in just a little bit, there's a machlokas where exactly that framing or that border was. So if you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, "Va'ika miskarto to go v'tefach dechi misader lechem Allah habitasaitzuch." So we'll say, remember again, the shulchan was a table, obviously, but it had basisa miskartosav. It had a miskeres, had like a framing, like a border around it. So we'll say, Sinai the Gemara says, where that framing was a tefach. So we'll say, so if it was a tefach, then what? That pushed everything on the shulchan up a tefach, which means then what? That the height of the shulchan together with the loaves was either 16 or 13, right? But it's not 15 or 12. There's the extra tefach of seis for the miskeres. To which the Gemara says, "Kimandar miskarto lemato." So this Gemara reflects the opinion holds of Osai that the frame did not actually extend above the surface of the shulchan, but rather again was more like a decorative band below the shulchan. So Osai, so you have the surface of the shulchan. So we asked the question based on the idea that perhaps the frame extended above the top, the surface of the shulchan. Now what we're saying is that no, the miskeres actually extended, was a decorative band below the surface of the shulchan. So therefore, it did not contribute to the height. So the Gemara says, and according to the opinion who says that in fact the miskeres was above the surface of the shulchan, aye, so if that's the case, then why don't we say the height was either 16 or 13? To which the Gemara answers, Parkude hava mefarkido belechem begabei de shulchan hava. So we'll say, even according to this opinion, he will hold that. So let's look at Rashi. Parkude mefarkido. Rashi says, Kein prakdon shelo haise zekufa b'shava ela mishupas v'nota klape chutz. So we'll say, even that opinion will say that the decorative band, the frame, we'll say, did not sit really on the edge of the shulchan, but rather extended almost outwards. So even if you say it extended above the top of the shulchan, the stacks did not rest on top of the band or of the frame, but rather that band or frame actually extended outward a little bit. So that either way, the stacks still rested on the actual surface of the shulchan, which is why you have the machlokas, either 12 tefachim or 15 tefachim. So the Gemara says, Kidesanya. We learn this in a braisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Lo hayu sham snifin. So ultimately, again, there were no supports. There were no golden supports on the side of the shulchan. Ela miskarto shel shulchan ma'amedes es halechem. So it's actually very amazing. Rabbi Yossi holds that what? There were no snifim. There were no golden support boards on the side of the shulchan. So what supported the stacks? There was a miskeres. There was like a frame around the side of the shulchan. So that ultimately, again, I'm about to say now, again, to be clear, remember, everyone agrees that miskeres only extends a tefach upwards, right? In other words, it's not tall, but it was enough to hold the stacks in place. Ela miskarto shel shulchan ma'amedes es halechem. But rather, Rabbi Yossi says, it was the miskeres of the shulchan that held the stacks in place. Amar lo, miskarto lemataisa, to which the rabbis respond to Rabbi Yossi, you're wrong. The miskeres did not extend upwards on the shulchan, but rather, again, the miskeres extended downwards. So we'll say, so essentially, the miskeres extended from, it started at the, we'll call it the surface of the table, and went downward towards the legs. Okay, so we'll say, so again, another, what's exciting about these Gemaras is you begin to see these fundamental machlokim in terms of how the kelim were made. So again, by the way, I want to point out, Rashi already quotes this machlokes. Rashi in the Torah quotes this machlokes. Already when it speaks about basisa miskartos sabib, Rashi quotes the machlokes. Is the miskeres from the surface of the table extending upwards, or is the miskeres from the surface of the table extending downwards? And you see there's an afkamina. The afkamina would be, if you hold that the miskeres extends upwards, it could be that according to Rabbi Yossi, halacha lemaisa, you do not need the snifim. You do not need the golden supports. Whereas, obviously, if you hold that the miskeres extends downwards, there is nothing holding these stacks in place, and you would need the snifim. Okay? I'm Rav Yochanan. Let's go back there. Divrei Omer miskarto lemata haisa. So this is actually very interesting. Rav Yochanan says, according to the opinion who holds that the miskeres did not extend from the surface of the table upwards, right, but rather, again, extended from the surface of the table downwards, then I'll say this yields for us a very important halachic concept. So we'll say what that means is that the shulchan was a kli with a flat surface, right? The shulchan was the utensil, which means what I'll say, the shulchan did not have a base kibul. The shulchan did not have a receptacle. So we'll say it's very important to understand. If you hold that the miskeres extended from the surface upwards, then the shulchan itself has a receptacle. What's the receptacle of the shulchan, I'll say? The actual surface, right? Just to give you this idea. If you were to pour liquid on the surface of the shulchan, what would happen? What would happen? It depends, right? What does it depend on? If the miskeres extended upwards, then the liquid would pool, right? Because the miskeres keeps it in. If the miskeres goes downwards, then the liquid simply pours off the side. So we'll say, so this is a very important halacha lemaisa, as we're going to see in just a moment. So watch this. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the divrei omer miskarto lemata haisa, according to the opinion who held that the miskeret extended downwards, right? Downwards, not upwards, downwards. Then that, we'll say, what that tells us is that what? Tabla hamisapachas temeya. We'll say that tells us that a tabla hamisapachas. What's Tavla Mespechas? Look at Rashi. Tavla Mespechas, almost right across in Rashi. Sheicholim lehishtavish b'tzadzeh, kima b'tzadzeh, shechalokim mitzad tzadeh, shnei tzadeh. So we'll say, if you have, let's say, sounds almost like a cutting board, right? So you have like a, you have a tavla. You have a, slab, thank you. You have a slab. And I'm going to say, that slab can be used on both sides, right? So according to this approach, that should be tmeh. I'm going to say, tmeh means, it's mekabel tuma. Why is it mekabel tuma? Because it's like the shulchan. We'll say, now again, we know the shulchan is mekabel tuma. So again, Now, if you tell me that the miskeres is lamata, which means that the shulchan itself has no base kiva, has no receptacle, then what that tells me is that any flat object that can be used, right, ultimately is makabel tuma, even if it doesn't have a base kiva, even if it doesn't have a receptacle. They both say this is very important because normally we assume that what? In order for a utensil to become tame, we normally assume that it has to have a receptacle. But what you're telling me is that the shulchan, that the miskeret extends downwards, the shulchan I know can be makabel tuma, so you're telling me then that even a slab that can be used on both sides, we're going to see why it has to be used on both sides, if used on both sides, halacha ma'aseh says makabel tuma. On the other hand, the divrei om miskarta lamala ha'isa, if you hold that the framing of the shulchan extended upwards, that means what? That the shulchan had a base kibbu, the shulchan had a receptacle, then tavla misapech esti ba'ilach. Then ultimately, again, you would have to ask, you would have to ask a shayla about a tabla misapeches, this slab that can be used on both sides, is it mekabel tuma or not? So as I see here this, so again, depending on how the shulchan was structured, creates other halachic realities as well. If the miskeres went down, not up, that means that even a flat surfaced utensil has the ability to be mekabel tuma. Michlal. The shulchan bar kibuli tumuhu. So I'll say, so are you telling me then that the shulchan itself, let's take a step back. So you're modeling hilchos tumas kelim after the shulchan. Are you therefore telling me that the shulchan had the ability to be makabel tuma? That's not true. Hakli eitz asay lenachisu. I will say the shulchan was a wooden utensil that was meant to remain at rest. I will say, remember the shulchan was a wooden utensil. Why? Because remember it was made of wood and coated with gold. So watch this. If the shulchan ultimately, again, is a kli eitz ha'asoy lenachis, it's a wooden utensil meant to remain at rest, and it's not mekabel tuma, because we learned that what? V'chol eitz ha'asoy lenachis in mekabel tuma. Any wooden utensil, I will say, that is not meant to be moved, that is meant to remain at rest, is not mekabel tuma. My timer, what's the reason for this? Dumya desak ba'inun. Because I will say, in order for a utensil to be mekabel tuma, it has to resemble a sack. Literally a sack. Why? What's masak metalta malivereikon? Just like a sack can be carried empty and full, I've called metaltlin malivereikon. So to Rabbi say, any utensil which is carried empty and full, ultimately again, is mekabel tuma. So Rabbi say, therefore, any utensil which is not carried full or empty is not makabel tuma. The assumption over here is that the shulchan of Osai was not meant to be carried, it was meant to remain stationary, and therefore halacha lemaaseh it should not be makabel tuma. To which the Gemara says, Osai, listen to this. Shulchan nami metalta mali bereka. No, the shulchan was also meant to be carried full and empty as well. Where? Get ready for this. Osai, kidrei shlakish. Listen to how beautiful. Domrei shlakish. Osai, surrei shlakish. And it shows that the shulchan was carried full as well. Mike Sib. Ala shulchan hatar. We'll say, what does the pasuk mean when it says that you shall place the lechem upon him on the shulchan hatar, on the shulchan which is tar? Tar, michlal dikatame. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. So ultimately, the fact that it calls it the shulchan hatar indicates to me that what? That the shulchan has the ability to become tame. But how could the shulchan become tame? After all, we just said, Rabosai, the shulchan is a kli eitz ha'asoy lenachis. It is a wooden utensil that is meant to remain stationary. If you're telling me that ultimately it can become tame, that means what? That means it can be moved. So we'll say, when is the shulchan moved? So watch this. Melamed, el melamed. We'll say, this is so beautiful. Shemat bin osola ole regalim. So we'll say, so the Kohanim used to bring the shulchan out to show the Oli Regalim on the regalim. When they would come Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkis, they would go ahead and they would bring the shulchan out to show the assembled people. Va'omrim lahem. And the Kohanim would say to the Jews who were there, Re'uchi baschem lifnei ha'makom. See how beloved you are in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So both sides, how would the Jews see how beloved they were in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu from Lechem HaPanim? So watch this. Kedivrei Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Nes Godol Na'aseh B'Lechem HaPanim. There was a great miracle that was performed with Lechem HaPanim. Siluko Kisiduro. And the Rabbi said, the removal of the loaves was just like the placement of loaves. Meaning what? Just like the loaves were placed on there fresh and hot, so too they were removed from the shulchan fresh and hot. So ultimately, again, they would bring out the shulchan to the people to show them how beloved they were in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at this incredibly dramatic miracle. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, losum lechem chom biyom hilakcho. Literally, again, to place hot bread on there, biyom hilakcho, that it was still hot on the day that it was removed. So, what do you see from here? You see from here that ultimately, again, this is why the shulchan is makabel tumah. Why is the shulchan makabel tumah? Because ultimately, again, it was a movable utensil. When was it moved? When was it moved? Apparently, it was moved to by the kohanim. Ultimately, again, during the regalim, to show the people how beloved they were in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look at this dramatic miracle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps the bread fresh. So I'll say, so ultimately, again, that's why we can use the Shulchan as a model for the halachos of Tumas Kelim. Because the Shulchan itself ultimately was Mekabel Tumah, because even though, again, it was made from wood, it was made to be moved. Therefore, again, because it was made to be moved, it could be moved full or empty. Therefore, it resembles sack. It resembles, ultimately, again, the sack. And therefore, I will say, again, depending on how the miskeres was fashioned, ultimately, I could learn out from here to other hilchos kelim. But I'll say one more line, then we'll stop. V'seifukli mishum tzipui, but I don't understand. Why are you calling the shulchan a wooden utensil? We will say, ultimately, again, the shulchan was coated with what? Was covered in gold. Which means now, because of the tzipoy, because of the covering, it should be treated as a metallic utensil, a metal utensil, a golden utensil. If that's the case, Rabbi say, then again, halacha lemaisa could become tamei. V'seifuk lei mishum tzipoy, milo tana, did we not learn, hashulchan v'hadul biki, shenivchesu o shechipan b'shayish, Shabbos said, did we not learn that what? That halacha lemaisa, if you have a shulchan, a table, we'll say this dul biki, interestingly enough, is a type of chair, but it was a type of chair that was used not as much for sitting, but more to place stuff on top of it. Shenifchesu. We'll say, let's say part of the kli was removed. They were lessened. O shechipan b'shayish, or you went ahead and you coated it with stone. You coated it with marble. V'shir behind makom hanachas kosos, but you left behind, ultimately, again, enough space to be able to put cups down on it. Tinein. Ultimately, again, it still retains its identity and is capable of being makabel tumah. In other words, as long as you left enough space to put down cups. Rabbi Huda says, makom hanachas chaticho shir in, lo shir lo. Ultimately, Rabbi Huda says, you know, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to pick up in Meretz Hashem with this halacha, Meretz Hashem, tomorrow.